This edition of Nation Talk is brought to you by Marriott Hotels and Resorts Canada. Book your individual business, workshop, conference, retreat, or gathering at a Marriott hotel near you. Hi, and welcome to another edition of Nation Talk. On today's show, I have the distinct honor of being with an extraordinary Cree woman at large, Sharon Venn. Sharon is here at the All Ontario Chiefs Conference here at the Delta Chelsea this week, where she spoke. And Sharon, I just want to say welcome and tell us a bit about why you are here at the conference and about who you are and what you do.
Well, I was invited by the Chiefs of Ontario to make a presentation on the international issues related to Indigenous peoples and where the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples sits in relation to the United Nations, what Indigenous peoples can do to use the Declaration, and some of the issues that are taking place at the United Nations right now, both in New York and also in Geneva and in other United Nations forums.
Before we get into all that very, very, you know, relevant and interesting stuff, though, can you just tell us a bit about yourself right now? What are you doing presently? And you are a lawyer. Where did you study?
I am an Indigenous lawyer. I also have a Canadian university law degree from the University of Victoria, which is on Vancouver Island. And I was one of the first Indigenous peoples to graduate from law school in Canada back in the 70s. I think there was, when I graduated, like 9 or something like that. I was the first Indigenous woman ever to graduate at the University of Victoria Law School. So I have been working at the United Nations on rights of Indigenous people since the beginning when we started in 77 and going forward. And I've worked in many different areas. And right now I'm still working at the international level. I'm also working with a number of First Nations on implementation of their own legal systems. So I do a lot of work across the country with and around the world with different Indigenous peoples.
Now, can you talk to us a bit about the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples? Now, and peoples.
Yes.
And I put that S on there because there's something extraordinarily important about that.
Yes, because when we first started going to the United Nations, they created a working group. Well, how the United Nations works is that they study issues, and usually they create a working group to receive information through the UN system. So they have all kinds of different working groups. And the first working group they created was called the Working Group on Indigenous Populations. We weren't even a people. They weren't really sure whether or not we were a people, like human beings. So they called us a population. You know, like populations of moose and animals and birds and whatever. So we immediately said, we don't like the word population. And we immediately changed the name of the group. We said Working Group on Indigenous Peoples. Although the UN system didn't change it. We changed it, and we said, this is our working group. And we said, peoples and state governments like Canada, United States, you know, Australia, New Zealand, other countries, were really against the word peoples, because in international law, peoples are, the S is, we have a right of self-determination, which means we make decisions for ourselves, we control our territories, we have our own legal systems, our own governments. And so state governments like Canada were saying, no, you're not a peoples, you're a people. And under international law, people without the S are minorities. And minorities have the right to, you know, speak their language, you know, dance their traditional dance, you know, dances and, you know, wear their traditional costumes. And so I always say, like, you know, Canada encouraged us to, you know, have a powwow once a year where we can dress up, you know, and say hello and dance around the circle. That's what Canada would like us to have as rights. So we don't have any discussion about our resource land rights or territories or anything like that. So it's a huge fight in Geneva and in New York to recognize us as peoples with an S. And so we had a very long struggle just to get that S on peoples. And I was telling the chiefs this afternoon that in Vienna, when they had a big conference, world conference in Vienna in 1993, we were trying to push the word peoples through that meeting. And Canada was, of course, they were against it. And so they were trying to take it out of the document. So there was an elderly Maori lady, you know, went to a photocopying shop, and she got them to photocopy these red S's on a piece of paper, a white piece of paper, and handed them out to the Indigenous peoples, because we weren't allowed on the main floor of the plenary because we were, you know, we're in the peanut gallery. And so people up there, you know, had these red S's. And so every time the state government like Canada or United States or New Zealand or Australia or one of these countries tried to say that there shouldn't be an S on peoples, indigenous peoples would stand up with the S. Not shouting or doing anything, just standing up with the S, and very visual cue. So the security government would tell people to, you know, sit down. And so people would sit down. And then on the other side of the gallery, somebody else would stand up with the S just to show the governments that are on the floor, because of security people and people standing up and sitting down makes a bit of a noise. And so people would look up, wonder what was going on. Here's the indigenous peoples with their S's. And, you know, there was, like, we did a lot of demonstrations like that to really promote that we needed to have the S on peoples. And we do, the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples with the S. So we're still, you know, that's a big thing for us.
Now, this past November, I do believe, the Canadian government finally, after many years, endorsed the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Do you see this as actually changing anything now that Canada has actually endorsed the Declaration?
Well, I've always said Canada's endorsement of the Declaration had more holes in it than Swiss cheese. And it wasn't, you know, it's sort of a backhanded endorsement. But the problem with Canada's position is that the majority of the countries in the world, Canada's only one state amongst, you know, all the United Nations people, is that the majority of the General Assembly adopted the Declaration. So it is an international legal standard. Canada can't get away from that. You know, and they're going to try to get away from it. And I think that Indigenous peoples, both internally and outside of Canada, are going to put a lot of pressure on Canada not to back away.
Now, is there an example that we can give of how our First Nations can use the Declaration to our advantage?
Well, Article 3 of the Declaration has all peoples have the right of self-determination. By virtue of that right, they, you know, could freely exercise their political, economic, and social affairs. And I think what our peoples need to do is start taking up that language and saying, "This is what we're going to do in our you know our nations. We're gonna you know create our own government. We're gonna you know because we already had our own government. We're just gonna reinvigorate it and implement it. And we just need to you know pick it up and start implementing things for ourselves." Making decisions for ourselves and using, you know, that international standard that's recognized by the General Assembly. And if people are doing it on their own, state governments of, you know, 186 other people that voted for it are going to recognize that and they're going to support us. So state governments like Canada, which is a minority amongst international states, are going to have to, you know, step up to the plate. Because there's going to be a lot of pressure. People don't know how much pressure can be put on states. Like Canada lost the election in the Security Council because of their position on Indigenous issues. Also on the G8 and G20. But, you know, really, they have not a very good name. So that does mean something.
Now, is there a way that our young people can become more involved in the Declaration? Is there something that we can do to ignite interest for them so that they can actually use this Declaration to build on a better future for themselves?
Well, I think the whole Declaration was drafted for them. I mean, we didn't draft it for ourselves. Like, you know, we weren't over there spending years to draft it for ourselves because we're not the future. The young people that are coming up are the future. And so I think they should take a look at it, study it, understand what's in the Declaration, and use what they can. There's, you know, like this, we've been in a very long 500-year colonization process since Columbus. And it's going to take us a long time to rebuild our nations. And so any step that we can, or anybody can take going forward is a positive step. I don't believe in instant pudding solutions, add water, mix, and there we go. We have an instant nation. We have to rebuild our nations. And rebuilding means that young people, or anybody has to pick up the tools that we have created. And this is a tool. This is not the solution. This is a tool to build our nations. And that's what we were working on all these years, is to create these tools.
Now, Sharon, there are a lot more First Nations lawyers in Canada today. Can you tell us a little bit about that transformation?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's, I don't know how many there are now, probably close to 1,000. Over the years, well, there's been a program at the University of Saskatchewan, a summer program called the Native Law Program, which really assisted in helping Indigenous peoples to confront law school and pass law school. Let's put it that way. because it's the last bastion of the, you know, of the colonial system. And if you can understand how that works, you can help your people. So that program has been very influential. I think it's like 38 years into the program. So they've really encouraged a lot of hundreds of indigenous peoples to go to law school. And, you know, but I think going to law school in itself is not the answer, because people need to understand what they're learning there is not our laws, our indigenous laws, and that they're learning skills and they're learning tools to use for our peoples. And if they took that education to help our people rather than oppressing our people, because some of our indigenous lawyers, unfortunately, you know, have learned too well the colonizers' tools and use them against our own people. And we cannot allow that to continue to happen.
Well, you know, it's funny we talk about that. The human rights bill that's about to come into effect on Monday.
Yeah.
How does that affect our First Nations?
Yeah, happy Aboriginal Day. Gift that keeps on giving. Yeah. On next Sunday, the 19th, legislation becomes effective where the individual rights of peoples will be able to allow First Nations peoples to initiate action against their First Nations for what they perceived as violations of their human rights as individuals. And a lot of these violations that are probably going to file complaints about probably are something the Chiefing Councils have no control over, which is access to housing, education funding, health funding, you know, job security, whatever, you know, like all kinds of issues that, because of the nature of the way First Nations are funded in Canada, we really don't have control of those. I mean, if First Nations had control of the funding and we had unlimited amounts of funding, then you could really apply those kind of criteria. But when you're sitting in a situation where you're underfunded for everything and you don't have the standards that everybody else has, like, you know, clean house, clean water or whatever, you know, well, how can you sue the Chiefing Council for that? How do the Chiefing Council make clean water when they don't have the funds to be able to do it?
It sounds like it should be the federal government that's being sued, not our own people.
Yeah, but the federal government has definitely kind of stepped around it. So, you know, it's going to cause a lot of havoc in the communities. It's going to cause a lot of heartache. It might bankrupt some Chiefing Councils. And the only thing, if you're bankrupt, what do you have as an asset to sell?
Your land.
Exactly. And they have trying to put in place legislation now where that the land will be able to be sold. And I think that this is the way the government is thinking, that they'll do away with the reserves, because the government didn't take the land. The Indians lost it because they couldn't, you know, manage themselves, and they got lawsuits and they couldn't pay the bills, so they sold the land to eliminate the debt. Where's the government taking the land in that part? No, they're not anywhere. Try to have clean hands. And this is what they did to the Maori in New Zealand. You know, the Maori lost most of their land. Like, they have very little land left in Maori because they individualized it, and then people couldn't pay their taxes, and then they lost their land. And the government said, well, you know, we didn't take the land from them. They didn't pay their taxes. Everybody has to pay taxes. Doesn't everybody have to pay taxes? And when they didn't pay their taxes, the government took the land and said, well, too bad, you know, you defaulted on your taxes. It's our land now.
So I guess the moral of this story is, be very wary of your treaty rights.
Oh, hang on to your treaties like you're, you know, a drowning man, because we are drowning right now. But people have to understand what those treaty rights are, because there's obligations. I had a woman say to me, oh, well, you know, I'm going to sue my Chiefing Council because I don't have a house. And I said, well, what have you been doing to uphold the treaties? She said, what do you mean, what have I been up doing upholding the treaties? I said, everybody has a responsibility to uphold the treaties. Are you down fighting, you know, for your treaty rights, supporting the Chiefing Council for more money? Or are you just standing around waiting for this thing to come in so you can sue them? I think people have to take responsibility too, to assist in promoting our treaty rights. We can't just pass it off to somebody. You know, we're not Indian Affairs. We're, you know, supposed to be nations working collectively.
Well, on that very positive note, Sharon Venn, I do want to say thank you. Sharon Venn, extraordinary lawyer, an extraordinary Cree woman of the world. Sharon, chimagwich to you, and thank you so much for speaking with us here today on Nation Talk.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
This edition of Nation Talk has been brought to you by Marriott Hotels and Resorts Canada. For participating hotels and resorts, click on the Marriott logo on our website. For more information, visit our website at nationtalk.ca. Thanks for listening.